From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. About a dozen states have placed restrictions on what residents can do while the country watches COVID-19 cases rise. Some governors have issued so-called stay-at-home orders. This includes Vermont, where Governor Phil Scott yesterday issued what he called a stay-home, stay-safe order, that Vermonters can go out only for essential purposes, such as grocery shopping, caring for others, getting exercise, or going to work if their employer remains open. The order also called for the closing of, quote, in-person operations for all non-essential businesses. Here in New Hampshire, Governor Sununu hasn't gone that far, but he has taken steps to reduce social interactions, such as closing all schools and telling restaurants to offer takeout only. And the governor stresses he's constantly reevaluating recommendations as conditions change. Today in The Exchange, what these orders mean and how well they work. Let's hear from you. What types of restrictions would you like to see? Do you think those in place now are effective? Should they be looser or tighter? Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. And we'll talk with several guests this hour. We begin with Juliette Kayyem. She's a Homeland Security expert and a Boston resident. Juliette, welcome. Thank you very much for your time.
Oh, well, thank you for having me this morning.
So, Juliette, lots of semantics out there these days.
Yes.
Advisories, orders, shelter in place. How much does language matter with these orders that governors are now putting out?
I think language cuts both ways. So everyone has the same goal, or at least the states that are issuing these orders, which is essentially just limit people's interaction with each other. And if we could keep everyone inside for 2 weeks, we would be in so much better shape than the sort of hodgepodge of orders that we're seeing. And so the differences in languages in language really is significant only, I think, in terms of the tone that different governors are trying to make, that social distancing is different. It just sort of means maybe don't go to concerts, as compared to shelter in place, which has sort of a meaning that those of us from New England think about in terms of blizzards, that you want to stay put. And you're seeing variances. Ideally, from a Homeland Security perspective, where you have 50 states all encountering the same threat, you would want unity. And that's some of the criticism that the White House is certainly facing right now, is each state is doing this differently for a threat that is borderless, right? That is just going to, go from Massachusetts to New Hampshire, and could care less what the orders are.
That's really interesting. So again, given your background in Homeland Security, Juliette, how do you view the fact that this is varying widely state by state?
It's not good. I mean, I'm being honest. And so, because we don't know now when the clock starts. So I've been, I think there has not been very good communication about what, in fact, we should expect by what we're doing, which is essentially, as everyone now knows, we're trying to flatten the curve, slow the spread, all these terms that we know now, but we're simply trying to limit the number of people who are going to put stresses on the healthcare, on our healthcare and our health facilities, until we can surge both tests so that we know who's sick, and then, of course, resources to help those hospitals and health facilities. So if you look at New York, which is clearly on the spike, right? So they're clearly, if you just think of the curve, they're clearly on their way up. We just have to get our head around this. They have now emptied out the convention center and are now using it as a multi-hundred bed hospital unit. I mean, this is what we anticipate from a planning perspective. So ideally, you would want a uniform effort across the nation, led by communications by the White House, but enforced by the governors, because they tend to have the authority in their state to have a much more uniform effort, which would be essentially a shelter in place. That is the strongest language you know, short of a quarantine, which we don't want to get to, but that's the strongest language you want, which is there's something bad outside, right? Now it's a virus, sometimes it's a hurricane. You must stay inside, and we're going to make it really difficult for you to be outside. In other words, as a state or a mayor, we're going to close everything. We're going to, you know, not allow stores to be open. We're going to make it difficult. I would prefer that that's not happening. And the bad part of it from a planning and response perspective, which is the world I'm in, is the countries that have done this successfully, who fought the virus successfully, have always had a very strong national effort. You know, Italy was a bit late, but it looks like Italy is now over the curve. It looks like Italy has had the worst. The only way they did that was a nationwide shelter in place order. You saw Prime Minister Boris Johnson move to that yesterday. This president is not doing that. He's leaving it to the states. And that means that we don't even know when the clock starts for us. So when people ask me when it ends, I kind of say, you know, the problem is that it hasn't really begun for a lot of us.
Well, I'm definitely going to ask you about that in a few minutes, because that question is definitely coming up more and more. Yeah. But to this idea that this is being done differently state by state, Juliet, obviously New York seems to be the epicenter of this. But why should a sparsely populated state where everybody's kind of spread out, like Wyoming or North Dakota, why should they have a shelter in place, a very strict measure like New York?
Because all it takes is one to infect two, to then infect six, to then infect 12, because the period of which you might have exposure. So let's say, even if you live in a rural area, someone who you went to church with was just in Boston, where we have, you know, we clearly have here in Boston significant community spread. They're sick. You know, so in other words, the density, not density, doesn't matter at this stage. We have to assume, and I think the assumption is correct, that there is vast community spread across the United States. And I think, you know, I think your question, you know, that's in the South, you're seeing a lot of Southern states kind of ignore this. And the numbers coming out of the South now are horrifying, because, you know, a state like Georgia says, you know, well, what, you know, we don't live like New Yorkers. Atlanta is, like, without most people knowing it, Atlanta is almost at max with its hospital capacity right now. So these things are, So, I mean, so red states, blue states, rural states, urban states, you know, or urban areas, the virus isn't discriminating. That's why every country that's done this successfully has said, we don't care where you are. You're either a carrier or you're a barrier. Those are the only two options. You either are going to give it to someone, or you could get it from someone. So let's keep you inside to be protected. And we're all living by it. I mean, it's shocking. I sound, you know, I don't mean to sound matter of fact about it. I mean, I was pushing for this, you know, well before it happened, because I knew the pandemic planning. I still found last week really shocking. I sort of lost, you know, even as an expert, I lost sort of all my sense of, you know, normalcy. I feel a little bit better this week. But, you know, it is hard.
Got an email from Susan in Brentwood, Juliet, who says, I am strongly in favor of Governor Sununu issuing a stay-at-home order for New Hampshire residents. And as I said earlier, Vermont just did this yesterday. Not issuing stronger measures, Susan says, is leading many in our community to believe that this is not serious. And, quote, staying at home is only if they are currently sick, she says. Additionally, we should look to the childcare measures our neighbors in Massachusetts have implemented, making availability for required workers only. Susan, thank you for the email. And I want to remind listeners that you can email us as well. For the whole hour, we are talking about these different orders that governors have been putting into place, advisories, orders, shelter in place, and so forth. We're talking about the different language and what these really mean on the ground.
Yeah.
Our number is 1-800-892-6477. Our email, excuse me, Juliet, sorry, we want to get more listeners in there, exchange@nhpr.org. Go ahead, Juliet, your response to Susan's email.
I think that's really true. I mean, Susan's clearly hearing a stay-at-home order as different than a shelter in place, just for, you know, whatever. And I think that's right. I think sort of, you know, to the extent our planning is really a communication strategy to the public. And I love the stay-at-home orders. I mean, they're functionally not different, right? I mean, in other words, you're basically, we're, you know, as a governor or mayor is making it hard to go outside. I think people hear a stay-at-home order differently, and I think that's important that they do, that just seems really serious, like something really bad is happening, where shelter-in-place is kind of like, oh, there's a blizzard, and social distancing just seems like, okay, I'm not going to go to a party, right? So the language has to be strong. We're not getting it from the top, so that's falling to governors and mayors.
Well, let's hear a little bit from Governor Sununu at his press conference yesterday about why so far he has not issued a shelter in place and his thoughts around just the linguistics, the semantics around this. Let's hear.
I understand a lot of folks are asking about a shelter in place initiative. It's one of the hot button terms that's being used out there right now, and comparing New Hampshire with Massachusetts and New York, two states with high density areas and large numbers of confirmed cases. But please keep in mind, even in these states, there is not shelter-in-place orders. They're asking folks to stay at home, just like we are here in New Hampshire.
Yeah. And again, that's Governor Sununu at a press conference yesterday. I want to let listeners know that we have been talking with the governor's office. They've responded to our requests. We're both trying to get the governor back on our air to discuss this crisis. So I do want to let folks know about that. Juliet, what is going on in Massachusetts? What's the situation there?
So it's, you know, it's like a moment in time, but basically Governor Baker with the mayor, I think, were reluctant or we were not first out. I mean, I think that's safe to say, and I'm disinclined to sort of criticize it because I don't know all the details, but certainly I thought it was odd that it took until today, no one knows their days anymore. Today's Wednesday. So it took until Monday for Governor Baker to announce a statewide, essentially, you know, shelter in place mandate, which then impacts state services. And that's where we are right now. So essential services are open, markets and things like that. But I went for a run this morning, and I mean, I could have had the street to myself, you know. I mean, it was, people are abiding by it. And I think, you know, our numbers are, I think we're fourth or fifth state nationwide in terms of the number of patients. We are not seeing, I think we're low on the curve. And the anticipation is that maybe in a couple days we'll begin to see some of the stuff that New York saw, or at least we're in anticipation of it. We are lucky because of our very strong public sector to health community nexus here. I mean, Charlie Baker, you know, he was a healthcare executive, and we just have a really strong foundation with the colleges and universities, and all of them are leaning in. So I'm hopeful that whatever we see, the combination of now strong orders for Boston and Massachusetts with, I think, a strong sort of response apparatus, that we won't see the worst of what New York and presumably New Jersey right behind it are about to see.
Well, absolutely. Massachusetts and especially Boston, known for its, you know, robust and preeminent healthcare sector. So you've got that going for you, Juliet. A listener in Vermont sent us an email. I'd love to get your thoughts on this. This listener says, my husband works for an aftermarket auto parts factory in Vermont. They insist they are essential and are telling all employees they must come in. This listener says, for some, this is a blessing and for some, a curse. From my point of view, this is not an essential business. Mm-hmm. I am worried for my husband and our family. How are they defining essential and non-essential in Massachusetts?
So it's pretty tight. I'm surprised by that definition in Vermont. And I wonder, there's this really, not to get too legalistic about it, and I don't know the company, but because the federal government has been so far behind in terms of setting the standard, if any company has a nexus to the federal government, so think of a military supply company, even a small one, or a submarine, and you know, or naval base, or wherever up in New England, they are deemed as essential, so that the worker there is then deemed as essential. So you're seeing this sort of like hodgepodge of who's essential, who's non-essential. In Massachusetts, the governor has been very strict. I mean, it is essential delivery services, essential sort of functioning of life services. Companies are being, you know, strongly urged that the pool of non-essential be larger than the smaller essential, and whatever they're doing, that they have what's called, you know, continuity of operations, that you're able to do everything remotely. And, you know, we've had time. I mean, we've tested, you know, hopefully these companies have tested the systems. I'm a professor at Harvard's Kennedy School. Everything now moved to Zoom, right? So we've had time. So that's sort of, so if people are looking for like clarity, that's the problem here, is that we have 50 states all figuring out what they should do with no federal guidance or mandate. And it's like sort of the worst way that one could address stay at home or sheltering in place orders.
Well, and to that point, your desire for a national order. Michelle and Lee emailed. Yeah. She says, I live in New Hampshire. My ex-husband lives in Maine. I have my son during the week. My ex has him on the weekends. We have pretty much been sheltering in place, Michelle says. Yes. But my ex and people in the household where he lives are going out to work and to relatives' houses and not taking this too seriously. Michelle says, I'm very concerned about sending my son to his house. She says, I wish there was a shelter-in-place order across the board for the country, mm-hmm. so we can get through this as fast as possible. So that's exactly. Michelle and Lee. And Juliet, I'd like to take a call. This is Randy and yes. Keene joining us. Hi, Randy. Thanks for calling in.
Oh, thanks for having me. Hope everybody's having the best sure. day they possibly can, considering the circumstances.
Yeah.
Different standards these days. People ask me how I am, and I go, I'm pandemic good. Like, I don't know what else to say.
Yeah, there
right?
you go.
You know, good isn't enough.
That's a good way to put it, Juliet.
Yeah,
thank you
I'm
for
pandemic
that.
Okay. I'm pandemic great. I'm pandemic good. They're all relative.
Yeah. Anyhow, go ahead, man. What's your question?
Hey, well, no, it's more of a comment. I'm actually a city councilor down here in Keene, and I've been urging, you know, all the residents of Keene and, well, throughout New Hampshire, actually, that I can get a hold of through social media, you know, to call the governor's office and just demand that, you know, Governor Sununu do a shelter in place. Obviously, this should be national. I don't think we're ever going to see that with a lack of leadership in Washington. But at least I'm hoping we can get a little bit better leadership up in Concord. You know, Vermont, Maine, and Massachusetts have already shown that they have governors that can make the tough calls. And I'm just hoping that we can put enough pressure on this governor to do the right thing, because this makes no sense having all of our bordering state with shelter in place. And there we are in the middle of all of it, and we don't have a shelter in place. So, you know, I'm hoping everybody will call the governor's office today and add a little bit added pressure to Governor Sununu, and hopefully he'll do the right thing.
Well, and Randy, thank you very much for the call. And the governor, again, and I've been watching these briefings every day, he has said, I'm looking at the situation and it could change. But there are others who feel the way you do, Randy. And coming up, we're going to talk with the mayor of Manchester, who has strongly come out in favor of also a shelter in place. She says that would help her out a lot. Juliet, a couple last questions for you. This question of how long seems to be coming up more and more as Americans look at weeks and weeks of these orders, whether it's social distancing, stay at home, and so forth. It all kind of feels pretty dreary. What's the best way for any responsible public official to answer this question of how long?
So I think here's how I would answer it. Not tomorrow. And not a date certain, that as a leader, you're looking for metrics at this stage. And those include how many people are getting sick, how many beds are available at the area hospitals, how many ventilators, respirators, and testing kits. And that the goal is that we get into a steady state isolation effort. In other words, this is the tidal wave. This is sort of conceptually for people to think about it. So this is the tidal wave. And it felt like an on-off switch last week. Like, it's like, what just happened? You know, and I get it.
Right.
This is the tidal wave. The recovery will be more like a light dimmer. It's gonna go up and down, and maybe there's a pocket here, and we do it. But the ultimate goal is to be able to manage the risk, and the only way that happens soon is if everyone stays at home. The longer people don't stay at home, the longer it will take to manage the virus until we have ultimately a vaccine. So we're not going to be inside 18 months. You know, people see this 18-month number for the vaccine. We're not going to be inside for 18 months, but we're going to get to a better place where we can manage the risk and people can begin to live their lives again. That begins with you. That begins with all your listeners. The clock does not start effectively till everyone stays at home and we begin to limit the number of people exposed. So I'm a mother of three. I am writing off March and April. And I mean, there's no better way to say it. And I think anyone being honest would at this stage. Bill Gates just gave a speech about it. We can worry about the economy. You know, the president wants to open up. I will tell you this, our economy will be worse off by an unregulated, unmanaged virus than it will be by this brief but essential hit with the stimulus package, which we're going to get. Those are your only two options now, right? So they're both bad, but one is much worse than the other. So let's manage this virus and get back outside.
Oh, Julia, it's really been good to talk to you. I hope you can join us again, but for now, we'll let you go. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
That's Juliette Kayyem, Homeland Security expert, professor, and Boston resident. Coming up, why the mayor of Manchester wants tighter restrictions. Also, NHPR's Josh Rogers on what the state's political leadership is saying. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on New Hampshire Public Radio. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, public health directives, from shelter in place to closing non-essential businesses to social distancing, how these decisions are made and how effective they are. Let's hear from you. What kind of restrictions would you like to see in New Hampshire? Should they be tighter? Should they be looser? What do they feel about right to you? Let us know. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. You can give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. You can use Facebook or Twitter as well. With us now on the line is Joyce Craig, Mayor of Manchester. Mayor Craig, thank you for being with us.
Oh, thanks, Laura.
And also with us, Josh Rogers, NHPR's senior political reporter. And Josh, thank you also very much for your time.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, Mayor Craig, you've called on the governor to impose tougher restrictions on public activity than he has thus far. What more do you want to see, Mayor Craig?
Well, you know, first, I commend the governor on the steps that he's taken to address this pandemic, from closing schools to restaurants and bars and eliminating red tape associated with unemployment. But really, the one thing that's proven based on science and data is to combat the spread of COVID-19 is for residents to stay home. And I think until we hear that as an order coming from the governor, it won't happen.
What kind of behavior are you seeing in Manchester, Mayor Craig, that makes you think this would be helpful?
Sure. So we are seeing individuals obviously make changes in what they're doing. But at the same time, we are seeing people still gathering in larger groups than they should. I read on social media this morning someone who had been at Market Basket for the senior hours, and they made note that there were five people deep in a line. So, you know, as much as we encourage, and every opportunity I get, whether it's social media or on the radio or on TV, I strongly suggest that families and people, anybody in our communities, to stay home whenever possible until there's an order in place. It's just not going to happen.
What else are you seeing besides that grocery store behavior, which I don't know if shelter in place would change that because people still have to go to the grocery store. But what else are you seeing on the streets of Manchester that make you think, you know, I could use some help here?
So, you know, we are delivering lunches to families and students. And when people are waiting for those lunches, they're closer than they should be. So we're educating people as we go, but, you know, it's getting that word out. We're seeing people walking along the streets and closer than 6 feet apart. So again, it's making sure that people understand the best way to fight this virus is for individuals to stay at home. Every day that the governor does not issue a stay-at-home order means there are going to be more infections, more stress on our health care, and eventually more fatalities. And I understand that this is not an easy decision, and really nobody wants it, but it's absolutely necessary right now.
Josh, remind us, please, what restrictions the governor has put in place.
Well, I mean, there's been a rolling list of restrictions. The most recent one was an order limiting gatherings to 10. You know, that came 10 days after the governor declared a state of emergency and, you know, 8 days after he closed schools. And so, you know, he's saying that he's reacting to conditions on the ground. And, you know, over the past 10 days, he has been consistently saying that, you know, this could change, restrictions could come. You know, he's been stressing that voluntary compliance is the language he uses, is in his estimation, getting the job done right now. And, you know, but he hasn't ruled out taking further action. But he has, you know, he has liked to dwell on the fact that, you know, in no states do we have, you know, essentially martial law enforcing these with tremendous rigor. I mean, some states and municipalities are more aggressive than others about sanctions for violating you know, stay at home or shelter in place orders, depending on the terminology. But he's suggesting right now he believes we're where we need to be.
Well, and the governor has said at these briefings. Yeah. Go ahead, Mayor Craig.
Well, we have medical professionals. In fact, you had two on, I think, yesterday or the day before, Chris McCracken and Joe Pepe, president and CEO of Amiskeag Health and of Granite One Health and CMC, respectively, both saying that we need to support a stay in place. And we also have workers who are forced to go into work for non-essential jobs right now because there is no order. In fact, self-employed or independent contractors are not able to are not covered by unemployment benefits unless there's a stay-at-home order. So, you know, it's this situation where we really need we need the governor to step forward now and provide this order in order to keep our community safe and to curb the spread of this virus.
Mayor,
I see. So you're saying, go ahead, Josh.
Have you had the chance to speak to the governor about this directly?
I have. It was last week.
And what did he say? Basically, what he's been telling the public?
Yes, he's not ready for it yet. He used the governor of New York having not issued anything yet, but now that's changed.
Well, that is one thing that has been interesting having at his briefings. You know, typically, you know, there's lots of, you know, every governor embraces some form of kind of New Hampshire exceptionalism. And, you know, perhaps during a pandemic that makes a lot less sense. But, you know, the one thing that has been interesting is to track the governor's language about, you know, kind of keeping his eyes on what other states are doing. He's taken to referring them as partner states, which is language you don't typically hear from him. When you spoke with the mayor, did he say, you know, I'm keeping my eyes on what's going on elsewhere and that will tip my hand?
It wasn't that specific, and it was a brief conversation. You know, he said he's not close to it, like he continues to say, but he's not there yet. And again, that was last week.
You know, Mayor Craig and Josh, this has come up a lot at these news briefings that the governor and top state officials have been holding week by week. And to that point that you've been raising, Josh, about how, you know, the governor has said he is looking at this day by day. OK, so it's not a I will never do this ever. I want to play a clip from the news conference just yesterday where the governor said, look, the situation, the rules, the restrictions could change depending on how this virus evolves nationally and regionally.
We very well may have to take steps in the future to escalate things as we go. We're not there today. We're going to, again, look at the variables, the interaction with our citizens, how businesses are doing, how citizens and communities are handling these very different circumstances of isolation. We're going to look at our surrounding partners with Massachusetts and Vermont and Maine and Connecticut. These are all variables that have to come into the mix because we are part of a bigger region here, to be sure, and there is so much cross-border contacts that we can potentially have. We cannot just shut down the borders. We can't limit transportation from one state to another, nor would we necessarily want to, but that isn't in our opportunity. So we have to be part of that bigger picture, to be sure. So things could escalate. They could ramp up, but we want folks to take the social distancing very seriously. We want to take the ability to work at home, teleworking essentially whenever possible, forcing restaurants to go to takeout, all of these steps, cutting down social gatherings to 10 people, all of these are really critical steps that other states have taken. We're right there with them in a lot of that. And again, as different states and different regions look at their variables and they escalate things, we have to be cognizant that, again, the surge is still possibly a few weeks off here. We're going to get more and more cases identified throughout New Hampshire, and we'll take appropriate steps as we go forward.
Again, that's Governor Sununu speaking at a news briefing yesterday. Today in The Exchange, we're looking at all these public health directives that different states have been coming out with differently, from shelter in place to stay at home orders to social distancing. We're looking at what these directives mean, how well they work, and we'd love to hear from you. What kinds of restrictions do you think New Hampshire should put in place? Do you think the ones in place now are effective? Should they be tighter? Should they be looser? Let us know. Our email is exchange@nhpr.org. Our phone number is 1-800-892-6477. And Mayor Craig, Josh Rogers, I want to take a call from Nashua. And I believe Mayor Donchus has called in from Nashua. Mayor Donchus, thank you for being with us today. Okay, I guess we're having a hard time with Mayor Donchus. You know, for the foreseeable future, I am remote and all our guests are remote. And sometimes these technical things happen, and that is okay. Or Mayor Donchus or anyone else can give us a call at 1-800-892-6477. Josh, you have been at these briefings. We just played that clip from the governor saying repeatedly, look, this could change. Did he give you a sense, Josh, of what factors he's going to examine when he does make that decision, if he makes that decision to put a tougher order in place?
Not with any specificity. I asked him if there were, I think he used the term benchmarks that he was looking at, and he said no and kind of indicated that, you know, kind of we'll know it when we see it. There's obviously a question about waiting. You know, he implied in that in the tape you played that, you know, the surge is coming, and perhaps when the surge comes, we'll take more serious action then. Obviously that raises the question of whether the surge is going to be worse because less serious action isn't being taken yet. But I mean, the bottom line for the governor at this point does seem to be that he sees, you know, this voluntary compliance with advice is essentially achieving the same result that, you know, Mayor Craig and others are finding wanting.
And I think, Josh,
what are you doing on your own? Yeah, go ahead, Mayor Craig.
Sorry, preparing for the surge. We have 250 beds now set up at Southern New Hampshire University in preparing for the surge. And I view an order coming from the governor of a stay-at-home in the same light as that. It is preparing for the surge as best we can. We need to make sure today that people understand the criticalness of staying at home so we're not spreading the virus. The scary thing about this is that people are carriers and they don't even know it. And so the more we can stay put, and that doesn't mean you're locked in your house. Obviously, you can go out for essential things such as groceries or medication, but generally speaking, to work and live and stay at home is critical at this point.
Mayor Craig, you're an avid runner. What about exercise? This is coming up more and more. New Hampshire is an outdoorsy state. We like to get out. I myself have been out walking every day just to, you know, refresh and recharge. So what about you? Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. I've been taking more walks now than I have been running just because of the schedule that I'm keeping. But that's absolutely critical right now. A walk, ride your bike once the snow is gone, you know, starting your garden maybe. But the fresh air is critical.
Let's take another call. This is Roger in Manchester. Hi, Roger. You're on the air with Mayor Craig and Josh Rogers.
Hi, Mayor Craig and Josh Rogers. I just wanted to say yesterday I was shoveling in a neighborhood, and an elderly lady was talking to me that she didn't believe that, this thing was really happening. She's heard that this is a hoax and it's exaggerated and all that kind of stuff. And I just wanted to say that I think we need people to tell people the truth and that not to fall for these conspiracy theories.
Wow, Roger, thanks a lot for calling in. And Mayor Craig, have you heard this, that, you know, some residents are saying it's all a hoax and I don't believe a word of it?
Well, I think that's part of it. Until there's a seriousness in terms of, you know, we've got to stay home in New Hampshire, then it is hard to believe.
Josh, I wanted to ask you again about the news briefings that you've been covering every day. How much social distancing is going on at these briefings, Josh? I was watching one the other day with a couple of my teenagers, and one of them said, gosh, they don't look like they're 6 feet apart up on that stage. So what's going on in terms of these rules and restrictions at those news briefings?
Well, the briefings have not been daily. I mean, they've been mostly every other day, but they have the social distancing has certainly been more rigorously observed on the reporter side of the podium, though the chairs are set up 6 feet apart. Sometimes I think that, and you know, certainly the governor and top officials are endeavoring to stay farther apart than they might, and there's obviously no handshaking going on. But, you know, I think the observation by the teenager in your midst that, you know, perhaps they were standing closer than 6 feet is accurate. They are trying to fit within a camera frame. But one thing that has been interesting about these briefings is in the last couple days, they've set up a checkpoint. These briefings are now taking place up on the campus of the Fire Academy and the Emergency Operations Centers. And when you drive in the driveway, there's a flashing sign that says checkpoint for the last 2 days. And there's state troopers there who come to the car, request an ID, ask what you're doing, ask if you've traveled internationally, ask if you've had any contact with anyone who you believe could have been exposed to COVID-19, ask how you're feeling, and then pull out a thermometer that they, you know, take a reading based on your forehead. And if you have a temperature, presumably you're not let in. And so that's been in effect
wow, so that's
the last
different.
2 days.
Yeah. Well, we got an email from Otto who says, my employer has been deemed essential by the DOD, Department of Defense, so our work will be going on uninterrupted. Otto says, I believe everyone on the manufacturing floor was excited to hear we will not be closing. My question is, if people are now going to work in places where they don't interact with customers or outside people and are doing only essential activities outside of work, Otto says, how is this any more risky than fully sheltering in place? Our highest risk actions are the necessary ones. Otto, thank you for the email. And Mayor Craig, how do you respond to that?
Yeah, when I think about the first responders and health officials who are working from the city's perspective, frontline, we are preparing them and making sure that they have everything that they need to keep them safe, from materials to, you know, wipes and everything like that. So we are making sure they've got everything that they need. They've also changed the way that they're doing work. So they're really limiting their exposure to the public as much as possible. So we've looked at our processes within the city and made changes. We are continuing to provide the services that the community needs and requires, but we're doing it differently to ensure the safety of our employees as well as the safety of our community.
Well, and we got an email from someone who says, our veterinary service is essential. Doctors and staff cannot really work from home and can't even do their work at a 6 foot distance. And I appreciate that point. You know, if you and the veterinarian are dealing with a large dog, you know, sometimes it takes both of you. Sometimes even the cats get pretty upset. What do you think, Mayor Craig? Would you consider, if you were in charge, veterinary services essential?
Well, I think I think they could do the same thing that our physicians have done. So maybe push off sort of the annual exams or things like that, but be available for emergencies only. So they don't have to keep their full staff in as essential employees, but can come in as necessary.
Well, I want to ask both of you about the politics of this moment, and then we will let you go. At the news conference yesterday, the governor was asked about President Trump's recent statements that the cure can't be worse than the disease, he's quoting the president there, and that it'll soon be time to, quote, reopen the U.S. economy. Governor Sununu was asked about this yesterday. He had a very different message. Let's hear.
Look, I can appreciate, I think I speak for every governor and across the country when we say, of course, we want the economy to come back as fast as possible to allow as much of the economy to stay healthy and reactive to the COVID crisis so we can get our groceries and our gas and all of these sorts of things. What we are not going to do is overly accelerate or loosen regulations just for the sake of the economy at the risk of public health. That we are not going to do that in New Hampshire. Public health has to be preeminent and come first. There's a lot of anxiety over the unknown. We're going to make sure that we keep taking steps forward to not just allay that anxiety, but to make sure that we're creating a system that can deal with the surge capacity needs or whatever needs you might find in your community, whether it's in education or even in your business. But we're going to do it in a way that public health is preeminent. So whatever messages is coming out of Washington, we're going to take care of New Hampshire first.
So, Josh, as a political reporter, how do you view the politics of this moment, of that statement, especially since we've got a Republican governor, a Republican president, and a Democratic congressional delegation?
Well, I mean, the first job of a governor is, you know, the interests of the citizens of the state. Obviously, it's always a balancing act. Shot through a lot of the governor's comments on this. I mean, obviously, everyone brings their own ideological perspective, and you can see that in, you know, his talk of voluntary compliance in some ways, listening to him talk about shelter-in-place orders. It's sort of like, you know, the argument over mandatory seatbelts. Oh, if we're getting the proper, if a lot of people are using seatbelts and we don't have to force them, then that works just as well. And so, you know, there's certainly an ideological overlay, but, you know, it varies from state to state. You look at Governor Mike DeWine in Ohio, a lot of people are, you know, crediting him for being, he's a Republican, for being, you know, an early person who was willing to take serious steps to protect citizens in his state. And, you know, it is interesting to hear the governor speak positively, effusively about the congressional delegation. He's often been at odds with them, and they seem to be, you know, working together well at this moment, which is certainly something that the public would want. And, you know, President Trump is a different sort of animal in terms of his relationship to, kind of partisan Republican Party politics than we've typically seen. And, the governor is obviously trying to strike a balance.
Well, and Mayor Craig, last thoughts from you as you work to at least do the best you can in Manchester.
Yeah, again, I consistently go back to our community. They're a giving community. They've been very patient and appreciate all they're doing and want to just stress again how important it is for all of us to stay home, to remember that this is not going to last forever, that folks are making difficult decisions. But again, it's all based on making sure that our community is healthy and thriving. And again, if at all possible, please stay home.
Do you have the authority, Mayor Craig, to take further measures than other cities? Could Manchester take different measures than Concord or Nashua or, you know, Claremont?
I do not, which is why we've had the conversation with the governor and working with Mayor Donches and just trying to stress again the importance of it from our community's perspective.
All right. Well, again, I want to let listeners know that we have been talking with the governor's office, and we are both trying to get the governor back on their air to discuss this crisis. So that is being worked on. For now, though, I will say goodbye to both of you. Mayor Craig, thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Joyce Craig, Mayor of Manchester. Josh Rogers, thanks for helping us out. I'm sure we'll talk again soon. Thanks.
We will, Laura.
That's NHPR senior political reporter Josh Rogers. Coming up, a leading infectious disease doctor from Dartmouth College's Geisel School of Medicine will give us the medical professional's take on all these restrictions that we've been talking about that have been varying by governors around the country. And we'll keep taking your questions and comments. Lots of emails coming up, so I will share those. exchange@nhpr.org is the address. The phone number, 1-800-892-6477. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. This hour, emerging public health directives from social distancing to shelter in place. We're asking how the nation's governors have been making these decisions, what they mean, and which ones are more effective. Let's hear from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, or call in 1-800-892-6477. With us now is Dr. Lisa Adams, practicing physician and associate professor in the Infectious Disease and International Health section at the Geisel School of Medicine at Dartmouth. She's also director of global initiatives there and co-chair of Dartmouth's COVID-19 task force. And Dr. Adams, busy times for you, I'm sure. Thank you very much for being with us. We appreciate it.
It's a pleasure to be with you.
Well, we've been talking about different types of orders that different states have put in place. Again, stay-at-home orders like the governor of Vermont just issued, shelter-in-place, social distancing, and so forth. From your perspective, given that this is what you do, infectious disease, what's most effective?
We certainly know that in dealing with the COVID-19 pandemic, what we really need to do, we don't have a vaccine. That's a long ways off. We don't have a medical cure. We need to be implementing public health measures. And those include some things that we've already done, the school closures, the banning of public gatherings. But it's really in the social distancing that has been encouraged. But it's really time now to make that a mandate. We don't have any time to lose. I'm a physician, so I'm concerned about treating disease and saving lives. And I'm a scientist, so I look at the data. And the data are really clear right now in terms of where we are in the epidemic growth of curve of what we're seeing in New Hampshire and more broadly in the U.S. And we know from both the global experience, right, the countries that have been weeks and months ahead of us, and we know from historical data what we need to do to now curtail this epidemic. And I'm happy to talk about the data. I think it's really clear looking at the, again, the global experience, but also historical data. So we have studies of what we call non-pharmacological interventions, right? These include the standard public health measures that we've talked about, and that these are what we need to do, and we don't have the vaccine or medicines to induce a cure. And these measures were studied in a well-done paper by some CDC colleagues. And what they did is they looked at death rates over a 24-week period in 43 U.S. cities during the 1918 influenza pandemic. And what they found was that the use of these non-pharmaceutical interventions, the school closures, the bans on public gatherings, the isolating and quarantining of contacts,
all the
social
stuff we're
distancing
seeing now.
Measures.
Yeah.
Exactly. When these measures were launched early and were layered as a multi-prong approach and were sustained over periods of weeks, that's what had the most impact in reducing the overall mortality and really flattening that epidemic curve that we've been talking about and preserving our healthcare workforce, which is another priority.
Oh my gosh, yeah. And we did a whole program on that a couple days ago, really dedicated healthcare workers here in the state and needing more help in terms of protective gear. So we definitely have talked about that. I want to bring our listeners in, Dr. Adams, if we could. And Andrew is calling in from Concord. Hi, Andrew. Thanks for being with us. Go ahead.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for your input on the data. Again, I'm calling in support of the governor. I think that Governor Sununu, again, this is unprecedented times. We haven't seen something like this since the bird flu in 1918. So again, what data we have at that time is at all rough, but what we're seeing across the world right now is not good. The implementation that Governor Sununu has done, I think, is in a timely and orchestrated manner in coordination with the White House. And he's doing a really good job, because if you do too much too fast, people panic. We saw this with toilet paper. People thought, I still don't understand the premise of it. But again, implementing certain shutdowns in a calm manner, starting with schools, starting with takeout restaurants only, starting with tattoo parlors, barbers. Again, it does hurt the workforce. But again, that curve that we're talking about, it can be altered. And the steps that Governor Sununu has taken is the right steps in the right order. And I think anything more aggressive would be would really, again, people in New Hampshire would not take to that very well.
Andrew, I want to let our guest jump in, and I'm so glad that you called, because this is the more moderate approach that the governor has taken. As Andrew says, you don't want people to panic. I also wonder, Dr. Adams, if people do start to feel restrictions are too tight, you know, especially as spring comes to northern New England, will people just say, oh, forget it, you know? So would they be more likely to obey more moderate restrictions? Andrew, good to hear from you. Thanks for calling in. Go ahead, Dr. Adams. Love your thoughts.
Well, I think we've got a number of measures in place right now, but let me just make it very clear that time is of the essence here, right? We are seeing exponential growth of this, of COVID-19 in our own state and in the U.S. I mean, I've watched the numbers go from 7 to 13, 26, over a matter of days. We're now at 108 cases. The time to act is now. We know that if we start putting in these measures sooner rather than later, that's when we're going to have the impact that we need to have to reduce the caseload and as I've said, sort of flatten out that curve, even delaying of cases. So I would also say, I know that people are being encouraged to stay at home. And I really like this analogy that someone said, we don't encourage people to stop at red lights or to drive on the right side of the road. We mandate that. And I think that's where we are now, because if we start encouraging, I feel like that people, as we've heard from your previous guest talk about, that they may not take it seriously enough. And that's really what we need to be doing now. And I think it needs to be delivered in a very careful way so that we don't induce panic, because I do appreciate the risk of that. But I think it's just getting everyone on the same page so that we understand what we need to do in this unprecedented public health emergency.
Well, lots of emails from listeners that I will probably not get to all of them today, but we will be covering this definitely in the days and weeks ahead. And we've got Congresswoman Ann McLean Custer coming up next, so I can also address some of your emails with her. But Elaine sent us an email that I would like to throw to you, Dr. Adams. Elaine says, why are New Hampshire liquor stores still open? Schools, most businesses, colleges, and much more are all closed during this medical emergency. If we are called upon to enforce social distancing and remain at home as much as possible, why encourage people to gather in a closed space? Now, this is clearly a political and economic question, but I do wonder about that. I'm not going to ask you to address liquor stores specifically, Dr. Adams, but just the idea that there are places that are still open. We all kind of still have to go to the grocery store, although I guess it's time for me to maybe sign up for one of those, you know, to-go delivery services. But what about that? How do you see people sort of navigating that?
Yeah. Well, I think the policymakers are the ones that need to decide what is considered essential businesses in this time. And I will leave that work to them. But we do know that as much as possible, if we can limit our physical contact with others outside of our home, do more curbside pickups, you know, really, really limit, allow us to interact and get our, you know, necessary daily functions done by practicing social distancing, that's going to be the most effective measures that we can implement at this time, right? That's how we're going to be able to mitigate the impact here. And that's what we're talking about. Anything we can do to decrease contact with others is going to have a positive benefit. So that's how I would encourage policymakers to think about it as well.
Well, and toward that end, you know, again, policymakers are the ones who are making these decisions. And we've talked all hour about how different governors have gone about this differently. How much influence do you think doctors like you have, Dr. Adams? You're a leader in this field at a leading medical institution. How much influence do you think people like you have in these decisions, which are, as you noted, partly political?
Right. Well, I think our role is to, as physicians and scientists, is to bring the data to play in the decision making so that evidence-based policy making can be done. And that's what I think our role is, to share what my colleagues are seeing from the front lines of this epidemic, to provide the data of hospital beds, ventilators, epidemiologic projections that we have, and to really encourage the urgency for us to be able to act together. This is an incredible opportunity for us to act collectively. This is a chance for us to all step up and do the right thing. And I think our role can be also to encourage, you know, the population to do that. And I would say particularly young people, right? The ones who are not likely to get to suffer the worst consequences of this illness, but are and with their mild diseases are the ones who may unknowingly contribute to community transmission. So I feel like our role is to say to the public and to others, this is the time to stay home. This is, if you won't do it for yourself because you're not worried about getting the disease yourself, do it for your roommate who has asthma. Do it for your 60-year-old neighbor who has to go into work because they are working in an essential business. Do it for your doctor so that they can stay healthy and take care of you when you get sick. Or do it for your grandparents and their elderly community. Again, this is a chance for us to all rise to this challenge, step up together, and do the right thing. And I think that's something that we as healthcare providers and public health practitioners can, that's a message we can convey.
Well, Dr. Adams, thank you very much. And I hope you can join us again. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
That's Dr. Lisa Adams, practicing physician and associate professor in the Infectious Disease and International Health section at the Geisel School of Medicine at Dartmouth College. And coming up, a special hour two of The Exchange. We talk with New Hampshire Congresswoman Anne McLean Custer. You can send us your questions in advance to exchange@nhpr.org. And we'll be back in a moment.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.